So the question here from Anna says, in a recent email, you answered five questions, and one of those was, should I eat before a workout? So my answer was, if you are a woman who's well-fueled, you're eating regularly, evenly distributed meals and protein throughout the day, it seems to matter less. So if you are a woman, however, post-menopause and/or younger, and you are a really hard gainer, you're losing muscle and you know it, you're trying to gain but can't, in that case, I would suggest that it's probably beneficial for you to have some protein, no matter what kind of exercise you're going to do, some protein prior to the workout in order to hold on to muscle mass. Because otherwise, if you're already losing it and you've got a trend that nothing is working, I'm not able to gain. In fact, I might be losing and I'm losing strength. We need to do everything we can to make essential amino acids available because otherwise, if the body needs them and doesn't have them on board given to it, it's going to go get them from the muscle mass that is the storage place for them. So that from Dr. Abby Smith Ryan out of University of North Carolina was some of the research that she's done. And those women were peri and post-menopause. But it showed that it doesn't have to be a full meal, but if you can have about between 10 and 15 grams of protein, which is maybe the equivalent, and I hesitate to give this one because not everybody will tolerate eggs, but two boiled eggs is about 12 grams of protein. So that kind of would help you get them on board. It still means at that point you want to eat afterward because by the time you've been up, you did a workout. You know, within probably an hour, hour and a half after that workout, you're ready for breakfast anyway. You should be. So one of those first meals needs to fall there. But it is true that it has been looked at a little bit more closely. Fasted versus fed doesn't seem to matter quite as much, but that's only true if you're not a woman who's chronically dieting, chronically skipping, or chronically fasting, which means you're dieting because it's really hard to get in adequate calories and protein when you're fasting for a really long window. If you're just doing a reasonable, 12, 13 hours overnight, you're probably okay. So yes, thank you. Great, great ask. Thanks everybody for the questions too. Okay. So if I could just read them. Nancy says, you previously mentioned that you are no longer using raw leafy greens in your smoothies. I know, and I'm so glad I don't live in Arizona and am eating lettuce there too right now, I think. In case you haven't seen, there seems to be a problem with parasites on some of the fresh food there. Are you steaming them or just not using them? So I don't steam them, so I'm not making an extra effort to get in lettuce or spinach. If I use it, I would probably be most likely to use spinach as a bed of vegetables underneath. But I generally don't buy that type, so I'm just buying other kinds of vegetables that are more likely to be cooked anyway. So yes. So it's just leafy greens is what I'm, not eating a lot of. And it's not that I don't ever have a salad. It's just that I really notice a difference that I feel so much better not having as many as I used to have. I mean, I used to have tons of salads and I just feel so much better not. Linda said, will stomping work as well as heel drops for bone health? Thanks. And honestly, I think it works better, Linda. So if we were looking at the continuum, heel drops are here. And if we look way over here, that's drop jumps from a chair and then rebounding up and jumping again. But your stomping comes a little bit higher than that. Then if you can stomp upstairs, even better. So combining those two things, because if you can stomp, you can probably do the other one. And there's some evidence that stepping up and down, kind of think step Reebok, basically, that actually is beneficial, and sidestepping is just slightly higher than that for some reason. But combining the stomp with a stare, even better. Katie says, on long drives, 1.5 hour or more, I am finding that one or more of my hips begin to ache while sitting. Are there moves or stretches that I can do while riding that might be help with that? So I do have a question. Katie, is that whether you're the driver or the passenger? Is it both cases? Because that's going to give you some clues too that we might want to dig into. So if it's true when you're the driver, but not necessarily the passenger, could have to do with you've got one foot reaching for the pedal. And so your hips are out of balance in number one. So if we can figure out which is which, we've got a little bit more information. But braking frequently, always a good one. The number four stretch. So you can do that in a seated position. I'm standing right now doing these, but I cross my ankle over on the other leg, bring it up. So if somebody were looking at me, it looks like the number four drawn. And that's why we got that name. You're going to point that knee toward the floor and then sit down deep into a squat or as low as you need to go. As soon as you feel the stretch in your hip, you have a stretch. Keep pointing that knee down, not with your hands, but you're pointing it toward the floor and you're getting to your piriformis deep in your hip. That may not be where you're feeling the discomfort, but that is probably something that needs to be released in all of us anyway. So it's a good thing to do. When you stop and break, hip flexing, hip flex that, or that hit the hip flexor with a basically a lunge, and it's the rear leg or a warrior pose if you do yoga. So you're really pressing the heel down, pushing the hip forward, and opening that up. And I say that when I say that, and that is not probably making your hip more mobile. It is just stretching it temporarily. It's not making it more flexible because we're just kind of giving you a temporary, oh, that feels good, that feels better, but that muscle is going to go right back. It's going to tighten right back up again. So it's like we have to keep doing it and it's going to keep coming back because it's already tight. So actually getting in there and doing some manipulation with a foam roller, with your massage gun, with trigger therapy from a masseuse who doesn't feel good but actually gets to the underlying problem. So fascia tends to get tight, and for women much more so. So men seem to have this really nice like a quilt, and it's perfect in the way it's supposed to be. And ours just kind of gets all mangled. And then when we've got that all, it's kind of acting like scar tissue if we let it sit and it's aggravated for a long period of time. So we have to manipulate it or have somebody do it. But a lot of times what we have is we have the muscle is kind of poking through that fascia. It found a way out. And we need somebody or something to push it back down. That trigger point therapy doesn't feel very good, but it helps to solve the problem as opposed to just a massage, which feels good temporarily, but doesn't actually get to it. So you may need a little bit more hip work regularly, if that's true. And just realize you've got a bigger clue about your hips are probably not comfortable with the irregularity. So they're kind of asymmetrical because you've got one here pushing. And oftentimes it's the opposite one. It's the idle one. And I don't know that to be true. So I'm going to scroll down here really quick and see, Katie, if you responded. Hips always hurt as the passenger, as the driver too. I know one leg is longer than the other due to scoliosis. And that probably is a big clue right there. So not unusual. So you've got a one-sided thing going on, and we all do. Yours is just a little more pronounced. So you at least know, and you've got clues there to go with. So yes, and stretching them both and doing some compression or decompression, I'm sorry, so that you are putting yourself on traction essentially can help. So, right now we're all kind of dead hanging, to open up our shoulders, work on grip strength is one way to do it, but it's also so decompressing for the spine. And although it's from the top down that you're getting that, the hips may also benefit, but doing a little bit more work, you can have someone pulling on the legs a little bit just to help decompress through the hips. And sometimes a good massage therapist will do that. So if you've ever had them grab a hold of your ankles, kind of shake you out a little bit, or bring one more firmly and pull it toward you, often that's kind of a sign of somebody who really knows what they're doing, as they'll be working on them a little bit like that. So anytime that you can get in those piriformis stretches, stretch the hip flexor, and all the things that go with that. We stretch the hamstrings, but we also want to make sure that you're doing what you can, no matter who you are, but especially you, to work on pelvic tilt. So in a all fours stance, so you're on your knees with your palms down on the floor, doing cat cow back, or trying to round yourself up and then coming back in the opposite. That's pelvic motion and working on trying to get the more motion you have in your lower back as well as upper back. But that's one way to work on a little bit more mobility. And if you feel like that's locked up, like I don't have any room to go, see if you can just work on that a little bit. And you're just working for your range of motion, your optimal. And that's not going to be the same as somebody else's. From another standpoint, doing that from lying on the floor on your back with your knees bent and your feet flat, and then work on picking your tailbone up and rolling up through the back and down through the back, working on articulating. And with scoliosis, you'll have a place where it's flat, it's not going to roll as well, but still working on some articulation and seeing if you can pull some in and out of that. Maybe helpful. Oh my goodness, the gang's all here today. Okay. So I hope, Katie, that was helpful. But frequent breaks for all of us when driving can be much more helpful. And I would start picking up clues. So if you're in the car and you're traveling, I would look at what have I been doing the last couple of weeks consistently, and just look at your activity level. And have I been stretching more? Have I been walking more? Have I been lifting more or less? And just look at, is there a pattern where it tends to be worse that you can connect it to find certain activities that might be feeling better or worse when you do them. Linda said Michigan is the worst. Is this, are we talking about the vegetable thing? Oh my goodness, I didn't know that. I thought it was Arizona. Maybe it's just because I have all these Arizona things still in my time zone. Linda says, what do you think about eating egg yolks? Do you go more for the just egg whites to keep cholesterol down? It really depends on toleration. So of the seven things to remove, eggs is one of them. So a lot of us are sensitive to eggs. Some sensitive to the whole thing, some just to egg whites, some just to egg yolks. So you personally have to test it. I don't eat a lot of eggs because they're a highly likely to become food sensitivity food. And my body will tolerate some. I can have egg whites about twice a week. The whole egg would be great. Doesn't agree with me. So I'm sensitive to the yolk, unfortunately. And it depends. So if I am trying to decrease inflammation, or we're trying to do that with a client, number one, food sensitivity is, we would need to know if it's a food sensitivity first at all, because it would cause inflammation. That's not ideal. If we can tolerate it when we reintroduce, if we were trying to decrease overall body inflammation and reset, do some kind of a reset, we might leave out the yolks and only go with egg whites, because we're going to cut out the fat. And there's a lot of healthy ingredients in the yolk. So I'm not discounting that to anybody who tolerates them. But it depends, what is your goal right now? What do you need? And I say that for everybody here, not just for you, Linda, because I know kind of where you're at. You probably don't need to cut anything out, but you want to realize that sometimes temporarily, we may want to do things, and we don't necessarily have to call it a diet, but the body sometimes needs to get, a reset, and you've got to decrease inflammation in order for it to be able to do the other magic that it should do. And then those foods may have a staple place in your diet after that. So I hope that was helpful and not confusing. Amy says, "May I ask what you noticed when you stopped eating so many grains?" Just my stomach was a lot happier. So less gurgling, less noise, better digestion, and probably consuming more micronutrients because of it. Leafy greens don't give you very much, right? You're not getting a lot of bang for the buck or ROI on leafy greens. You got to eat a truckload of them. But if you compare that to, something much more nutrient dense, like broccoli or cauliflower or asparagus, you're getting a lot more. And I know, we say, kale or spinach are some of the most nutrient dense things on earth, but the oxalates don't agree with everybody. And so eating just tons of salads and then throwing greens also into your smoothies, you may be actually fueling the very thing that kind of discounts what you're trying to do if your gut isn't really happy with them. So really just a matter of testing. If you're trying to eat a lot of raw greens and you're not getting the desired results, you might just want to take a look at it. It might not be working for and try cooking them for a while. So like a lot of things, you cook the food and the oxalates, you have defeated the majority of them. So you're still getting some. They're not totally gone, but it's a lot easier for the body to handle them if they're cooked than if they're raw. Okay, Katie, we caught that. And Paige says, "You have a hip challenge that is available. Would that also help with the hip work that you mentioned, Katie's question?" So yes, definitely. So there's a corrective hip challenge for sure that potentially could help. So taking through those particular stretches, those are a piece of it in there. There used to be one. So in the old site, there is one, and we can pull that over if it's a valuable one for anybody to access. All right, I think I have every question answered so far. Anybody else have a piggyback question on somebody else's? Linda says, "Does mint and cucumbers have oxalate-like greens? Want to switch it up today, so I put those in with my protein shake." So, no, actually, you're going to be fine. But there are some who will say the skin in cucumbers may be harder to digest. I have always liked leaving the skin on, but I know people who will take off at least part of the skin in order not to eat the whole thing. So, and part of the thing to pay attention to is it always comes down to an N of one. It's always you. Like, what do you tolerate? And do you like it? You took it off. Okay. All right. Anybody else got a question? A lot of nutrition questions today outside of the hip. We can stay on that theme, or we can jump off to something else.
Can I ask a question, or do I have to type
No, go for it.
what's a good substitute for I hurt my back when I was on the retreat? Well,
No,
anyway,
did I miss
did
that?
No, well, anyway, yes, and it finally got better, and then I was doing hamstring curls and lifts on the ball, and it makes it hurt again. So I've just been doing squats instead.
Okay.
Is there anything else I should be doing to substitute for that?
Yeah. So lying on your back, if you do that same exercise I just described earlier, so your knees are bent, your feet are flat, right? And then rolling up from your tailbone, trying to articulate all the way up. So you're kind of then in a bridge position and articulating back down. I would try that. Does
Okay.
that help? Not
I don't know. I'll try
sure.
it. I'll try it and see.
So I would want you to try that. And then before you come back to the ball, my suspicion would be that you are potentially arching the back a little bit when you come up. And if we could get you to just tip a tailbone up a little bit so
Okay.
that you're actually engaging the core in front to release the muscles in the back so they're not straining quite so much to do the lifting. But the first step would be work on the articulation up and down because that also will be a passive stretch for it. And do that so that you feel like you've got good range of motion and you're articulating smoothly first, and it feels good, of course, before you'd go on to do the next one. But then it'd be when you have your feet up on the ball again and you're ready to start it, you do almost the start of rolling the hip up and then lift up
Okay.
and see how that feels.
Okay, I'll try that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Does anything else release it when it tenses?
Well, no, I just have to get up.
Stop.
I just have to get up and
Okay. All right. Is there any other move that bothers you?
No, that's the first thing. I thought it was totally gone until I started, till I did that. And then it was like, wow.
Oh, is that the weird thing that Tracy was working on? Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Now I'm growling. Yeah. All right. Amy said, if you are sensitive to eggs, do you react to yolked? I don't. Yeah. I do really well with that, and it helps considerably. So, in case you're kind of blinded by that question, anybody else? So, there is a product called Yolked that is made with a kind of an underlying factor called Fortitropin, and it's made from eggs and egg yolk and helps in building muscle. So if you are a particularly small woman, a hard gainer, you're doing everything you can and not just not gaining, but also potentially you're losing a little muscle mass in spite of efforts, this might be something that you want to try. And I think the first time I did it, I did either 3 or 4 months in a row, and I gained a couple of pounds of muscle mass, which for me is hard to do. I've been exercising consistently, been lifting consistently, and so also eating protein consistently. It's not like I could dial up any of those without risking injury or fatigue. So I added that to test it. And it worked great, but I also wanted to cycle it off. I didn't want to be reliant on it forever and have it be yet another thing on my counter, right? So I cycled out of it. And then right in the middle of my move, I pulled it back in for I think 3 months again, just kind of deciding a long enough period of time where I was going to see a difference. And definitely did. And I know I was on my last few days as I drove back moving and again gained a couple of pounds of lean muscle mass, but have been able to maintain it. So when I rotate off and on, it's been great. But Amy's question was, so if it's made, Fortitropin is made from eggs. So if you are egg allergy, you can't take it. It's not going to work for you. So I'm sensitive, but that's not the same as being allergic. So I just can't, sit down and have egg whites every morning, even though high protein, low fat, that's a great food to have. But anything that can be a highly likely food sensitivity, you want to be sure that you're rotating. You may tolerate it fine if you have it a few times a week, but you give your gut a rest. But I will notice if I have like a whole egg, it's like, nope, that's just not going to work. Not very good. So I could probably get away with an egg in a recipe. It's not a problem because you're just having a very small fraction of it, but having it on a regular basis isn't great. All right. Anybody else got a question? All right, should I ask some? How's your, on a scale from 0 to 4, keep it small. So 0 is 0, not going very well. 4 is it's going great. How is your consistency with resistance training going this summer? Drop your number in the chat. Or show me your fingers. Be careful with that one, though, by the way. Yeah. 4 and 4 and 3. And who did, but Paige, what is 0? You were, did we not talk about this last Wednesday? What, how many days have gone by? Paige, unmute right now.
Yes, we did talk about it, and I went and looked at the Hot and Bother, the 10-day challenge. I figured I'd start with that since that was the suggestion,
Yeah.
and not the resistance training. So that's why on resistance training it's zero.
Okay, but
Figured
wait,
I'd be honest.
you have a resistance training day or two in there.
Well, that's yes. If I've looked at the Hot and Bothered, have I started it? No.
Okay, let's be clear. Is hot not bothered?
Hot, not bothered.
Okay. You have to be careful what you say to the universe, okay?
So,
Okay,
anyway.
so far you've looked at it. When is day one?
Well, I think we chatted about the fact that I have this. I think day one's going to be next Monday because I don't have a 10-day stretch where I'm not going out of town. So I was trying to get a 10-day stretch available to me so I could focus on it. So my plan is to next Monday.
Do you brush your teeth when you're out of town?
Yes, but my out of town is it's a very interesting. I do USA Swimming summer officiating, so it's not like there's a place to go. I'm in a camper. So anyway. So I might be able to find a park and some grass to go do stuff on, but you never know.
Okay, got it. All right. Okay.
But
How
I'll
about
keep
walk?
trying.
Can you get some
Oh,
walking in?
yeah. I've been doing
You're
my
good
3 to 5 miles every day in my yoga, all that. It's
now.
just not the resistance stuff.
Okay. Great. Okay. So
Anyway.
next Monday,
Yes.
we'll
I'll
see.
get on here and I'll tell you I've done my first one.
Okay. Very cool. And that sounds like a cool job, though, by the way.
It's volunteer when you have kids. It's a good thing. So, anyway, thank you though.
You're welcome. Okay. Lacey's got 4, Nancy 4, Lisa 3, Cammie's 4. Awesome. Jennifer's good. Linda's a 4. So we got some good numbers here. This is great. And we've got a date on the calendar for Paige. So awesome. All right. How's walking regularly for everybody? 0 to 4. Are you still rehabbing, Anna? Yeah. Are you on a bike or doing something else? Yeah.
But it's 110 out there too.
Yeah.
Doing other cardio.
Got it. So how is the rehab coming?
Getting there. I'm at the 6 month mark. They said it'll be a full 12 months to have it completely behind me, but I can do like 3 miles, no issue walking.
Good.
But still working on balance and fast twitch will be
Did
next.
you do you have hardware?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh
Okay.
yeah. It was like this. It was dangling.
So airports are now fun.
It actually doesn't ring, but
Okay.
got lots of hardware.
Bionic. All right. Oh gosh, yes. Too many fires in Colorado. Air quality is poor. I've seen that. Sad. Katie says three on resistance, two on walking. All right. How's nutrition? How's hitting protein? 0 to 4. At least 30 grams of protein 3 times a day. And or you're getting 100 grams minimum a day, unless you are teeny tiny and weigh less than 100. Yeah, me too. Paige. All right, Paige, you can't be at it less than a two for more than one number. So you already hit your quota today, girlfriend. Okay. All right. So what is the biggest challenge with the protein? Those of you who are not a four, what is the biggest challenge? I find protein difficult to hit 30 grams in the morning. What are you having for breakfast? Are you doing eggs or are you doing a smoothie?
My go-to is two slices of flax bread, and they're each 5 grams of protein. So I toast that, and then I put a layer of peanut butter, and then a layer of the Greek yogurt. So there's 18 grams in the yogurt, but I'm not, I mean, I'm just spreading it on. I mean, I put a big amount on each piece, and then I add some strawberries and blueberries, whatever fruit I have on top, with a little bit of the flax seeds over it. So I might be coming close, but probably more like 20 grams, thinking. I just don't love eating in the morning, and then I usually have a shake around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I guess I could switch and just like have a shake in the morning and figure and do, leftovers or something in the afternoon.
Or just a little bit of a shake to supplement. If you like that breakfast that you normally have, just your body's used to it and it's kind of, a staple for you. There's something to be said for, liking routine and liking what you usually do, and your gut kind of likes diversity, but also it likes consistency. So, if you can just if there's a little something you could add to what you're doing, or if you like the Greek yogurt and put just a little bit more in a bowl. And spoon it.
Do you think it's okay to add like little more protein powder in the morning and then do a shake in the afternoon? Like do it twice a day? I mean, I think you've said that you do that sometimes, but I don't want
And you're probably not
overdo it, but.
overdoing on the protein, but as far as overdoing on a protein powder, see how your gut tolerates it. And some, every gut is different, and every protein powder might be different on the gut. So I know there are people who don't do well if they have a lot of pea protein. Having some can be great, but otherwise overdoing it can kind of backfire on them. But find your sweet spot. So I would say maybe for the next week, look at it, test it, and say, okay, I'm going to try bumping it up and see what happens. Yeah.
And I alternate your protein powder and JJ's. Those just feel really good. I never have a problem.
Good. Are you using paleo or are you using plant?
Paleo.
Okay.
Yeah, paleo. Yeah, I didn't like the plant.
Okay. Yeah,
Thank
so
you.
yeah, absolutely. And that is less likely to, it's the pea that for some is it's something about the pea protein doesn't agree with some. I'm not one of them, but I know I've heard from a handful of people. Let me see. I think it's Cammie says mornings are good, but it's just so hot. Don't feel like eating after I get outside. Katie says, I recently learned in my or that my gut hates dairy. So I'm learning alternatives and how to compensate for losing my dairy protein source. I hear you. I have been trying to reintroduce dairy and it's like I'm force feeding myself and making myself feel miserable. It's like I have all the evidence that my body just does not like it. But this is the second time I've tried to, okay, I'm going to reintroduce again. Let's see what happens. And just is not going well. So I think I'm losing the battle, but I hear your pain. So I've done it once. I was dairy free for a really long time and, wanted to reintroduce because it makes it so easy, as a protein source to add. And I probably have gotten cottage cheese cravings from seeing all the cottage cheese on everybody's timeline, everywhere and everything. But I do like cottage cheese. And so it just doesn't like me back. Linda says, I love flax milk and almond milk. And both do contain like 420 milligrams of calcium. And it's more bioavailable actually than the 300 grams in milk. So it is true. For some, and I'll just throw this out there, and I know it's so easy. We set off alarms everywhere. So I hesitate to do it, but some will find that nuts can be problematic. So having too many, almond milk or coconut milk and also having nut butters or having handfuls of nuts for snacks, which still can be good because they offer fat and protein and satiety in just a small snack. But again, you might want to look at that. Some people do really well with it and just fine, and others, find that's not true for them. So just keep testing, what it is you're doing. And sometimes it helps to rotate things if you alternate one versus the other, as opposed to getting in a rut where all you have is that certain one type. So keep that in mind. And for those of you who are current members, by the way, if you refer a member to join during the month of July, while we're doing open enrollment, you're able to join us for a live 28-day kickstart. We haven't done one for a while, just live altogether starting it. So if you want a sister, a friend, a girlfriend, a colleague, who needs to know about us, share it. And if she joins, you get to do the live one with us. We're not making it community-wide. It's just for those who refer at this point. So it'll be a small, intimate group. So if you want some additional coaching, it's one thing, it's always available for you to go through the 28-day kickstart and do it as if it were 4 weeks long. But it's another thing to go through it, knowing there are other people going through the same thing with you and they're doing it. So, of course, I'm going to do it. You're not going to show up having not done it. And so it just makes it a little bit easier when we're all doing it together. Okay, so going, going, gone. I'll give you another opportunity to ask another question if you've got it. And otherwise, we will take a break. Can you say the start date again for the 28-day kickstart? So typically, we don't have a start date yet. Absolutely. So we will do that in August. So generally, we'll do that. We won't do it on a Monday because Mondays are a little rough and it's always this call. So it'll probably be on a Tuesday or a Thursday evening that we'll host those. And we'll let you know, we'll let everybody know who qualified by sending you an invite in the link to join us just a little bit closer. Yes. Fresh from a chlorinated pool. Actually, Dean had his first swimming lesson with Grandma today. So I'm still a little rough around the edges. When you do the kickstart, does that replace your regular program? Lacey asks. It can, Lacey, but it doesn't have to. So it includes their strength training with it. And if you are at this point where you feel like, geez, I need a reset. And I'm doing this, but I'm maybe feeling a little tired, a little worn out, instead of feeling like really energetic and really good from the program that I'm doing. That would be, I would say, just park what you're doing right now and come over and just do this and really reset all of it with the exercise that's included, but not extra, and follow the nutrition plan and the lifestyle things that we're also going to include. But if you are doing great on the strength training program you're doing, then instead of following the resistance training that's in there, keep doing what you're doing and you'll just not do both. Of course, you'll just keep doing it and substitute it instead. So it's kind of an either or depending on how you're feeling right now, but definitely not both. Yeah, great question. Okay. Great question. Can I ask of those of you who are here, how many of you have gone through an elimination diet? And I always hesitate to use that four-letter word, but it's the elimination diet is a phase of the whole thing because the other side of it is the reintroduction of it. And I know many of you, I've already done it, already doesn't. So maybe the question I probably should have asked is how many of you have not or feel like it's been a while, and I think I need to do it again or would benefit from it. How many of you feel like, no, I haven't. I think I would benefit. I need to go through it again. Nancy has not need to do it again, would probably benefit, never done it. Amy's done it. And long time ago, not, but feeling pretty good. No gas or bloating. Great. Haven't done it completely, just a few things I thought might be bothering me. Probably help. It's been a while. Definitely benefit from doing it again. Great. Okay. So just to kind of give you all a gloss over in case you don't know, and I think the majority of you do, but I'll just state it. The purpose is we remove seven different things. So, all the things, the gluten, the wheat, the so Linda can't eat breakfast, basically, right? If she was going to do it, right? So, we remove the dairy, the soy, the eggs, all of it. For about 3 weeks, just short of 3 weeks. And then we start reintroducing one at a time each of those. So the purpose of the elimination is to kind of clear the slate. And in case it were any of those things that were bothering you, kind of triggering and starting to cause what we call, what you hear called leaky gut, where the junctures in your gut are supposed to be nice and tight and just solid. And what can happen is particles of food start getting through because your gut is sensitive to them. Not enough to cause that kind of, reaction where you're gonna choke and your tongue swells up or your ears come out of your head and it becomes a life-threatening situation. That's an allergy, true full-blown allergy. But a food sensitivity, unfortunately, is harder to detect. Sometimes won't show up in a lab test until it's beyond a certain point, like It's one of those, you're not bad enough, so we can't detect it, we can't see it yet, but your body generally can. So we can get to the point where you physically can test it. And sometimes you see that. So it might be your joints ache, your hands swell, you're gassy, bloated, constipated, or have diarrhea. Those are the very obvious and easy things, but we don't have to see any of those four. That doesn't have to have anything to do with your gut necessarily, could still be happening. And that if you've got kind of a leaky gut going on, food particles, bigger ones, are getting into your bloodstream and that's causing the problem. So it's causing the body to kind of attack that, cause greater issues with digestion, elimination eventually, even if not right now, but it might be causing other signs of things. And you're more sensitive. Simply because you're a woman postmenopausal, because hormones change, the gut changes, the microbiome changes. And if you are a woman who has thyroiditis, 90% of thyroid patients, I use that word not because I'm a physician, because you're treated by a doctor, are also have the autoimmune version of it, which is Hashimoto's, which makes you more susceptible to, food sensitivities. You're going to be affected more than you would have, or more than the next push person would be, just more sensitive to any little trigger. So wheat and dairy are really more common. And removing them from somebody who's got Hashimoto's, for instance, can help them feel better, tremendously better. But if you're not absorbing because of some of those challenges, the food's getting through, you're not absorbing the micronutrients from good things you're trying to put into your body. So it's coming in, but you're not absorbing all of it. And that's another factor. So it's not just what you eat, it's what you absorb from the foods that you're eating that matter. So we remove all those foods temporarily to give your body and the lining of your gut an opportunity to heal if it needs it. Some people feel a huge difference removing some of those foods, and we're not trying to diet. Really, we're not trying to change caloric intake. We're not trying to reduce the amount of protein or carbohydrates or fat that you're doing. In fact, the more we stay the same, the better we know we're actually testing the food types, not the amount of it. So we try to look for substitutes. And, if you like dairy and you like your creamy dressing and you like ranch, for instance, instead of buttermilk or a milk-based product, we're going to try to help you make it with hemp hearts or with cashews. And, similarly, finding other substitutes. Inevitably, you may end up eating a little bit less or a little bit better because some of the things that you're including, you're just not going to be able to. You may not find a great bread substitute, for instance. Sourdough may work because it's not gluten, but you have to look at, is this the ideal? So we remove it, see how you feel, but there may not be a great change then. But then we choose, like, what's the one thing you missed? So for some, it might be cheese or Greek yogurt. I really miss those staples. So we'll have those for 3 days in a row at least two meals, if not three. So not just a little bit of cream in your coffee, but literally having a full serving at least two or three meals. And generally, we're going to see some kind of a reaction. If we've had a clean slate, now we introduce it kind of hot and heavy, we're going to feel it. If it's a food that really doesn't agree with you, even though that might not be a way that you eat that food normally, that's the way we challenge your body against it. So, in the case of if you wanted to reintroduce eggs, you might choose, if you suspect that you can do egg whites but not yolks, you might reintroduce one at a time and introduce your egg whites first and then see how you do, and then introduce the yolk next. But often it's just introducing the eggs and you're going to have them at least two meals. So maybe it's a couple of boiled eggs on a salad and then scrambled eggs for breakfast or dinner. So Similarly, we go through all of those foods, unless there's something that you already, I just don't include that. I already know I don't handle that really well. We're not, of course, going to make you reintroduce that unless you want to and you're looking to pick up clues and find out. Couple things you can do if you reintroduce something and you don't tolerate it again, but you want it in your life somehow and you'd like to be able to tolerate it, is you can look at, considering doing a stool test and say, is there something going on with my gut microbiome? And you get a result back from the stool test, and it will generally tell you where's your bacteria and how are they, according to where they should be. And it will give you the suggestion of what you should do and what you should take. So if you're taking a prebiotic, for instance, now you know not to just go buy a generic one, but you know which strains you're looking for to put back in your gut and which ones actually might be feeding the bad bacteria that doesn't, you don't want to grow. We need both, but you don't want to overfeed the bad ones and underfeed the good. And we want to switch that balance. So those are, we won't get that far and for you to go through a stool test, but we're here in the community if you want to, go through that and get that far and you really want that food back in your life. You would probably go through that process, do a stool test, do the probiotics, and then retest in 3 months and see how am I doing now? And is my microbiome up to speed? And or instead of doing the stool test again, reintroduce that food again and see how you're feeling then when you take it in. So that's kind of where you get for it. Lisa, I think, gosh, sorry, my eyesight is terrible. Is there a specific test for Hashimoto's? So yes, a physician can do it. Typically, a Western trained doctor doesn't run the right test, but what they need to look at is the antibodies. So that's the one that tips them off that it's Hashimoto's. So you've got to ask for it specifically. And if you have somebody who doesn't know and you're not sure, a functional doctor generally will be able to handle that for you. But your Western trained doctor, if you suspect, I need to know this, I think I probably have this. So, and you could also, we can always self-direct and order tests ourselves if you wanted to do that. But there is a very specific range of, this is where we want those numbers to be, where they're optimal versus normal. So you're not looking for that because a lot of normal lab results come back from people who don't feel very good. So you're looking for what is the optimal range and where is the indicator for Hashimoto's. And if you've got it, a lot of people have Hashimoto's and yet know it, it's under control, it's kind of what we'd say is in remission. They don't have any flares because they know they're avoiding dairy and gluten are the biggest two. So in that gluten family would be wheat, and the other grains that contain it. And when you remove those two things, they generally start to feel much, much better. Okay. I think we did it, guys. So I'll give you one more gone. And if you have a question, please drop it in the chat. And otherwise, that is it. Thanks, everybody, for being here. You are welcome. Thank you. Have a great week. Whoops, hold on. Different subject, but just thought of this. My functional medicine doctor prescribes testosterone cream, but my gynecologist prescribes a gel used for males that's cheaper. That is a statement as opposed to a question. Do you want a response? Let me know.
I just finished it down below. I just said, like, do you think they're the same or?
I can tell you that one. I do not know enough to answer that. Yeah.
I'll stick with what I'm using, even though it's a little bit more.
Is it working?
Yeah.
I would say don't fix it if it's not working, or if it's not broken. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
Okay, thank you.
generally, the biggest challenges I think is when we switch, and I've even noticed that from brand names, and I'm sure some of you have. I'll go back and refill a patch, and it's a different brand name, and I'm like, okay, I'm the 1% who will respond if there's a problem. I'm that 1%. But it just depends. I think some people are more sensitive than others to change. So if you don't have to, I would definitely, stick with what you've got if it's working. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for being here. Have a great night and a great week.